Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Yeah. Okay, Megan, just before we started recording, you were telling me a hilarious story about your weekend. So I'm going to need you to share that with our listeners.
Well, because I thought of you this morning because I woke up a little hungover and I was like, oh, good for Eric doing dry January.
I feel great.
But I was saying that, so yesterday, Andrew had gotten some good news about this apartment he wanted. So we're like, let's meet out. We went to this restaurant doing outdoor dining. And outside were two stretch limos. And going into the restaurant, the driver was like, hey, you want a ride? You know, you talk to your guy. You should get a ride. You're worth it. And I was sort of like laughing. But also, like, that's not something you see outside of restaurants typically.
Yeah, you don't really see that anywhere typically, right? Just like a parked limo that
wants to take you around the park.
Yeah.
And so I was sitting down and I was saying to Andrew, that's so crazy. Like, who would do that? And then three Negronis later, we decided to do that and took a stretch limo home because why not?
Now, was anything included in this experience? Was it like you get in and there's bubbly waiting for you, or was it like you just get the ride?
You would think. No, it was really like lit up like a party limo and the music was going real loud, but there was not a drop of liquor in sight, which is probably for the best at that point.
Right. Well, you know, Ubers nowadays, I mean, some of them will have like mints or bottles of water for you in the back.
It was not that kind of situation.
Like almost a luxury experience, but not quite.
Right, exactly.
Well, in other exciting news, there is a Gone with the Wind fabulous Real Housewives of Atlanta marathon coming up tomorrow. It's Kenya Moore's 50th birthday.
That's crazy.
I know. I mean, Deandra just turned 50 on Real Housewives of Dallas, Kenya turning 50. I mean, obviously we know 50 Cent. Everyone looks so fantastic for their age. And I talk about it all the time, especially when I'm looking in the mirror and seeing like, oh, these little wrinkles popping up my crow's feet. I'm like, how do I look like Ramona now? Not just when I'm like 60, but now.
I know. Well, but I mean, I think it is really good for especially women, like to see other women aging and it's fine. Like, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
40 is not dead. 50, you can still be, you know, really comfortable in your skin. More so, as we saw with Carrie in Real Housewives of Dallas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 50, age ain't nothing but a number, okay?
Yeah.
All right, what are we talking today?
Okay, well, we need to talk about Real Housewives of Orange County, the reunion part one. Then we have Southern Charm finale. And Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
Oh my God. Plus, I interviewed Bevy Smith, who you guys might remember from Bravo's Fashion Queens. And of course, we're going to wrap up with Rose and Thorn.
All right, so OC?
Yes. Okay, well, first, before we get into like the nitty-gritty of everything, a lot of interesting reunion looks at this event. Who nailed their look and who totally missed the mark?
I liked Gina's because I thought it was very different for her. Mm-hmm. And I think she'd even said in this behind the scenes moment that we caught that she was just like, you know, I'm starting to be more like me. Because I think a lot of times people, when they get on Housewives, they think they have to look a certain way. And so she's trying to pare back now. I thought Emily looked great. I mean, I didn't love the dress necessarily. It was kind of, just for me personally, too pageanty, but she looked great. Kelly looked great. Bronwyn was just doing a lot, I thought.
You know, if that look was on an Ariana Grande, for example, I'd be like, nailed it. Amazing. And I appreciate what she was going for, but it was a little bit too much for me. When I first saw Elizabeth and Shannon's looks, like when we released all of the images on BravoTV.com, I wasn't loving what I saw. But the more I was looking at Elizabeth's dress, the more I was like, okay, if this were Sutton wearing it, would I feel differently? If this were a different housewife, would I feel another type of way about it? So it grew on me as I watched the episode, because I think her hair looked really good. Her makeup looked really good. Elizabeth, I mean, Shannon, I still wasn't vibing with it by the end of the episode.
Yeah. I mean, I see what she was going for.
Yeah. It just didn't work for me personally.
Okay. So I want to start with the first issue that sort of came up, which was, again, the text message from Bronwyn's husband to Gina. Mm-hmm. I stand by that I think that it's fine that she took it the way she did. I think that's understandable. I don't think people should put winky emojis in texts if they don't want it to be misconstrued.
Yeah, absolutely. Based on all of the context that Gina was working with, I understand what she was saying. Was that Sean's intention? Perhaps not, but...
No, I think absolutely not at this point. At first, I wasn't sure. Now I really, you know, other people have added context, like Shannon, you know, saying you were so drunk. He was clearly very worried about you.
Yeah.
But again, don't send a winky face to
your
wife's friend. It's weird.
Right. It's weird. What if it was like the winky face with the tongue out? That'd be even worse, right?
Somehow that's more innocent to me. I'd be like, oh, okay, he's being silly,
yes,
you know?
Right, that is more silly than flirtatious or could be received.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I see that. Well, I mean, this whole conversation too between Gina and Bronwyn and then Shannon chiming in, I think very early on in this reunion episode, it's obvious that Bronwyn is not on the same page with any of these women. And honestly, at this point, probably anyone in her life right now.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure they're in the same book. You know, it just seems like Bronwyn is very much existing in this space that she has created for herself. And she's not really letting anyone else in, and nobody really wants to be involved, but is just so perplexed by the whole thing. There's a lot of inconsistencies, I think.
Absolutely. And I think that it makes sense to me why everyone is so angry with her, because she did talk a lot in the press before the show started airing, mm-hmm. and she really was putting them down in a lot of ways. And then I do feel like she has made all of these very sudden life choices, or life changes, I should say, and you have to give other people a chance to process that.
Right.
The part right. that I don't think is okay is Kelly saying that she thinks Bronwyn's faking being an alcoholic.
Your alcoholism was all for a story plan. You, Kelly.
Goodness.
You.
Yes, that is one of those things that even if you think it, you shouldn't say it because it is dangerous.
And that's the problem with Kelly. Like, I feel like she's never had a thought that she didn't feel the need to verbalize.
Absolutely.
In your darkest of dark places where you hold secrets, you can think that. Don't say it.
Yeah. It's not fair to Bronwyn and the journey that she's been on at this point for 10 months. She's now going on almost a full year of sobriety. It's not fair, whether you believe it or not, to try to discredit the work she's done there, plus the work that other people are doing who might be looking at Bronwyn as an example on the show of someone who is in recovery, who has been very open about it, very sharing about her whole experience. It's such a dangerous path to go down. I just wish Kelly bit her tongue in that moment.
Exactly. Especially the misinformation she's spreading. The idea that, well, you woke up and went to the gym, therefore you're not an alcoholic, is just not true. It's just not factual in any way. And as Andy said, you can be a functioning alcoholic.
Right.
It just, I don't know where she gets off that she thinks that she's the expert in all things and can decide if someone's has a problem or doesn't.
Yeah. It's sort of the larger conversation that's been happening pretty much over the last 4 years of these alternative facts, right? Like,
right.
You can choose to not believe certain facts and choose to believe others. And for some people, that's okay. And it just is so dangerous across the board.
Mm-hmm.
They also kind of glazed over Bronwyn agreeing that Shannon is an alcoholic. And I wanted to get more into that, but then I think went to commercial and we came back and we were past it already. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Can we break that down a little bit more? And maybe they did and it didn't make this episode. They could have done more, you know, actually filmed more, but it didn't make it. I don't know. But I thought that we moved on from that way too quickly.
Well, Ariana from Los Feliz, California wants to know, Bronwyn, if you think Shannon has a problem with alcohol.
Yeah, I do know that watching the filming of the reunion, Shannon was pissed. And she was pissed that it's come up again because it has come up at reunions past. And, you know, the thing is, like, I guess from her perspective, why do you keep bringing this up? You know, like, what are you trying to say about me?
Yeah.
just in general, I think. But I don't know. It's so touchy because, you know, it's just touchy.
It's so risky to put that out there to someone. And I think Shannon even says backstage, I believe she calls John and says something about, you know, Bronwyn doing this, but, you know, her kids are watching. And it was sort of like a few seasons ago when Vicky brought up, oh, Kelly Dodd does cocaine, you know, and you're just kind of like, you can't throw these accusations out there because these people and now their families are going to have to deal with the repercussions of that. Like,
yeah,
it's just, I don't know, just as much as Kelly trying to deny Bronwyn's alcoholism was dangerous, I think this was dangerous for Shannon in a different way.
It really does hit home with me why certain housewives don't show their private lives, though.
Yeah.
Because if I were Shannon, I'd be feeling so guilty for bringing John onto the show.
Yeah.
Because as she said, he's a partner in an insurance company. Now, when you Google his name, alcohol is going to come up in some of those, you know, hits on.
Yeah.
So it's like, in a way, she did that to him. And like, that's terrible. And why would you risk doing that to someone you love, you know?
Right, right. She probably feels guilty that she even asked him to film with her now and got right. him involved in some
exactly.
of these comments. But he really did a good job about being involved enough in Shannon's storyline this season and not doing anything to create his own, which not all house husbands, quote unquote, you know, have done in the past. So I do feel bad for him because he is getting dragged through the mud a little bit.
I know.
He didn't really do anything to warrant
no,
that.
No, all we've seen from him is really great things.
Yeah. We love you, John.
But I do think that I want a t-shirt that says, I'm fun, but I'm not an alcoholic.
I'm fun. But I'm not an alcoholic.
Yes. That'll probably be, if Shannon comes back next season,
yeah,
somehow related to her tagline.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have to ask you about the whole, I'm sure this is what you were going to bring up too, the whole conversation between Andy and Kelly about her social media
yeah.
behavior. I'm so glad yeah. this was addressed.
Yeah. Yes, same. I feel like it had to be. And I feel like maybe Andy had gotten flack too for taking it too easy on her on Watch It Happens Live.
Yeah.
But I think now in retrospect, he was probably saving it for the reunion. Maybe, you know?
Yeah.
And I just, what he said is true. It's not your behavior on the show. It's what you're saying on social media. So why don't you ever stop and not say those things on social media?
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, and we'll talk about this later in the episode with Catherine on Southern Charm, but it's just, she doesn't see it.
Yeah.
She doesn't get it because her response to that is, my fan base hasn't diminished. I haven't lost any followers. And it's like, Kelly, Ilaria Baldwin just got a whole bunch of new followers. It's not for the reason you think,
yeah.
okay? It's not a measure of you being a good person.
Right, right. I love that you made that your example.
I have been watching that story with just her and Armie Hammer have just made me feel alive
right?
these past couple of months.
I mean, damn. But yeah, with Kelly, it's just the question that Andy asked about, are you worried you're going to be on the wrong side of history? That is a question that I've wanted to ask so many people in the last year. And I think that's such an important thing to think about, because in the moment, you know, these things are happening, the pandemic, the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, in the moment, maybe you're not reacting the way that you should, but you need to think about long term. You need to see the bigger picture. And I don't think Kelly was seeing the bigger picture at all in the past year. And I don't think a lot of people were really looking at these situations the way that they should have been. And I appreciated that he was trying to hold her accountable and giving her a chance to speak on it and apologize or retract things that she has said in the past. And we almost got her there, but she didn't quite give in, I think, the way that she should have and could have and maybe deep down inside wanted to.
The mask thing really just put me over the edge.
Kelly, we heard you say so many things this season about masks and whether people should wear them. Tell us now, what is your stance on masks?
Well, I hate wearing masks.
And
right.
We
all
do.
I think everybody's on that with me. I will wear them because I have to, but does your pants protect you from a fart? Like, is it helping? Are the mask helping? I don't know.
Because to say, I don't know if it's doing anything, you don't have to know. You have to pay attention to what doctors and scientists are saying.
Right.
And if they are saying, here is the proof, you can't just decide that you're still not sure about it.
You know, it's just misinformation is out there and it's everywhere. And it's a bit concerning that she's so misinformed on so many things, because it's like, you should be more informed than a lot of other people on this stage at this point with your connection to such a news source. But, you know, that is what it is. Okay, we need to circle back to Bronwyn real quick, because there's two major things that come out at the end of this episode that I'm just trying to work through in my mind. So I need to talk to you about it. Number one, what point was Bronwyn trying to make in bringing up Elizabeth's ex? I didn't really understand where that was supposed to be going.
Because we got halted because Elizabeth was like, he has a fiance. But I think what Bronwyn was going to say is that she was trying to make the point that Elizabeth is a liar.
Right.
And she's like, I talked to her. Like, which, duh, though. Like, an ex is, if it's contentious divorce, of course he's going to say things that are a different version of what she's saying.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe he's not been entirely truthful about the status of his relationship because he's trying to protect her. He doesn't want to hurt her. He doesn't want to upset her, make things worse. I don't know. But it just felt, I don't know, really petty or something that Bronwyn was trying to be like, this is the information I have, by the way. Like, she was trying to take a dig.
And kept correcting Elizabeth when Elizabeth was like, I feel sorry for his girlfriend. She was fiance.
Yeah, I just didn't really understand the whole point of that.
I just think that whether or not you agree with her life, you know, Elizabeth is still in love with her ex. I think that much is clear. And so to not even be sensitive to that is weird to me.
Well, then number two with Bronwyn, the good stuff that she's allegedly offered Shannon's 14-year-old daughter. What the hell?
I don't know whether I was going to say this today, but as a mother, I'm going to. When my daughter Stella was 14 years old, at a very first beach barbecue, you went up to her and said, Stella, if you want the good stuff, text me.
Oh my God. When I was watching that part, my jaw was on the ground.
I did not see it coming. I definitely anticipated that whatever was said, because we did see it in the super tease, had something to do with, I don't know, like body image or something. You know, I never thought it would have been like, ooh, if you need a drug hookup? Is that what is being implied in the good stuff? Like, what?
All I know is I also felt like Elizabeth was asking some very pointed questions to Bronwyn. Because Bronwyn said, I wasn't drinking, but I wasn't sober. That's the difference.
Mm.
And I think what she meant was, and she clarified that to not be sober, it's not dealing with the reasons why you drink. But Elizabeth said, so define not, like, what not sober? Like, she was, trying to get at what other substances have you been addicted to?
Right.
Which, you know, we've not ever heard about that.
I know that has not been addressed, but something tells me in part two of the reunion, it will be.
Oh, it has to be. Or at least the Shannon stuff for sure.
I spoke with fashion queen star Bevy Smith about her new book, Bevelations, Lessons from a Mother, Auntie, Bestie. We talked about the new Roni housewife, Ebony K. Williams, and whether or not Bevy has run into Lisa Barlow at Sundance. Here's that interview. So guys, I am here with a fashion expert, a radio host, TV personality, boss businesswoman, and now author, Bevy Smith.
Oh, hello, lover.
How are you?
I'm really good.
So I know you got your champagne. You are ready to go.
I'm trying to uncork it right now. It's a little, the cork is a little resistant.
Oh, did you hear that? Oh, yes. I love that sound effect. That's great.
Me too.
It's just like you're just immediately calm after hearing that.
Right, exactly. My nerves are steadied now. Thank you for having me on.
Of course. Thank you for coming. So our listeners will remember you from Fashion Queens. Mm. Well, do you watch any other Bravo shows?
No.
No. What about other reality TV?
I don't.
You're like, no, I don't have time.
I don't. I am one of the worst. You know, Andrew Cohen is my, as I mentioned in the book, he's my minch.
Yep.
And I love that we have this relationship where, you know, Andy is like the king of all reality TV, and I don't watch reality TV, but we're still
right,
really close, and we obviously work together on a myriad of things, so it worked out.
Right. So as a Bravo celebrity, even though you don't watch the shows, are you friends with any of the housewives mm-hmm. or any of the other people on our shows?
Yes. Like I love Cynthia. I love Candy. I love Kenya. I love Eva Marcel. We worked together. Eva and I actually did my first ever hosting thing was a show with Eva on BTJ. It was called My Model Looks Better Than Your Model. And I was the style den maven.
Oh, wow.
And Eva was the host. That was my first ever TV hosting gig. So I did it with Eva.
Oh, my
God. I'm also friends with Mercedes.
Oh, I love her.
I'm from the Shaws. I love her. And I'm sure there's probably some. Oh, and I actually recently just did a pilot with Hannah.
Oh, okay.
Werner.
Summer House.
Who was on, Summer House. So her, and then also I'm friendly. Giselle and I run in the same circles. So yeah, so I know quite a lot of Bravo ladies. Oh, and then of course in New York, Ebony K. Williams is going to be the first Black Real Housewives of Real Housewives of New York cast member, and she is a friend of mine as well. So yeah, all the ladies, we orbit in each other's worlds, but I just don't do reality TV and I don't watch it.
Right, you're like, no, thank you. okay, so obviously we know Cynthia, we know Kenya. What can you tell us about Ebony? Because I know so many people are excited to see her on the show. I feel like she is like the exact energy that show needs right now. So what can you tell us about Ebony?
Well, I told Andy, I said, Ebony's going to come on there and hold her own. I hope the ladies are ready for Ebony.
Yeah.
Because she's incredibly smart. She's beautiful. And she's also wickedly, wickedly witty.
Ooh, okay.
So she's going to dance circles around a lot of people. I think a lot of people are going to wind up not being able to deal with her verbal dexterity.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're going to see another thing like how with Kenya, where people were like, oh my gosh, she doesn't have to hit you or throw a drink at you. She can just cut you with words. Right. Ebony can do that as well.
Right.
Ebony's incredibly smart. And she's also very Black identified, which is a really powerful thing to be on a show like Real Housewives of New York, which has had their, you know, a lack of diversity and everything. And now with Ebony being the first one, I mean, I think that she's a perfect selection because she'll do just fine being the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so great that we finally have that kind of representation on Real Housewives of New York City, because I live in New York too. I know you're from Harlem, born and raised, and still live there. So finally, I think we're starting to see a little bit more New York on Real Housewives of New York City.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Oh my God. Okay, so you are a fashion expert. Now, out of the housewives that you're friends with, or even the ones that you just know, who would you say is the best dressed?
That's just tough.
It is tough, right? Because there are so many with their own unique style in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And also, too, I don't critique my friends the way they dress. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not that person. I'm just happy if they have on clothes that are clean, you know?
Right. Well, we could even broaden it then to like celebrity, like in the whole pop culture celebrity space, who's someone that you're like, damn, they get it right every time?
Zendaya.
Mm-hmm.
She's amazing. J-Lo, amazing.
Yeah.
You know, Jane Fonda, amazing. I love Tilda Swinton, amazing. Michael B. Jordan, as far as men goes. Timothée Chalamet.
Ooh, yes.
I can rattle off celebrities.
Right. You're like, I have a whole list up here.
I have a whole list of fabulously well-dressed celebrities.
Well, then who would you say is your own personal style icon?
My mother.
Oh.
Yeah. She's incredibly stylish still to this day. She's 93 years old and she is fierce. And she has a great sense of style and she puts herself together so well at the age of 93. And so she is definitely style goals for me.
And where do you think she got her inspiration from?
I think just honestly, Black people are just a very creative. We are very creative people and very ingenious. And so that's the reason why you see so many trends come out of the Black community as far as style and fashion goes. We're just very ingenious in that way. And I think that my mom, when I look at her old pictures from the 1940s and the 1950s, you just see that, you know, you just see that someone, you know, she didn't make a lot of money, but she was incredibly well put together.
Right.
You know, And I just think that that's just a cultural thing. It's just a part of our cultural DNA, if it were.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I do want to ask a little bit more about your mom because I want to get into your book. So congratulations, first of all, on Bevelations, Lessons from a Mother, Auntie, Bestie.
Yes.
Congrats.
Thank you, baby.
You're welcome. So the book basically details your move from advertising executive to TV personality and everything that you are today. So what inspired you at that time to make such a drastic career change?
I was just miserable. I didn't want to do what I was doing anymore. You know, I had a job that was a dream job for so many people. I was making really great money. I was flying off to exotic locales. I was sitting front row at fashion shows. I was receiving gifts from major designers and fashion houses. And I was just miserable. And I realized that I needed to change my life. And I didn't know how I was going to change my life. I knew I needed to change it. And so the first thing I did was I changed my name. I used to be Beverly Smith, and I changed it to Bevy. Mm. And I wanted that to be kind of like the first, that one that to be the opening shot. Like a change is afoot.
Yeah.
She's a Bevy Smith. And I actually was inspired by my old friend, Puff Daddy, who has many names. He goes by Puffy.
Oh, wow.
He goes by Diddy.
He does.
He's Mr. Combs. He's Sean John. He's Sean Combs. He's all these many things. And,
right.
And I was like, well, if Diddy can have 25 names, surely I can have two. And so I did that, and it really worked out well. It really did shift things for me when I went from being Beverly to Bevy.
Yeah.
It was a shift, not just in me, but also in the people around me.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the way that they might receive you too.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So what advice would you give people who might want to switch up their career path? Because I feel like the biggest hurdle to overcome is that fear of the unknown. So what would you say to people who might want to do exactly what you did and just change completely?
Well, I will say it's not an easy task to do. And so like, get that out of your mind, get it out of your mind. Like, you know, I did it. I changed my life, began changing my life at the age of 38. And it really has worked out incredibly well. Like, I literally quit my job at Rolling Stone to become a writer and a TV personality and to, you know, just lead a more creative life. And I literally do that. I only make my money now. I make great money at just being creative. Mm-hmm. And so it worked out really nice. But it was not without its challenges. And so I would tell people, if you want to change your life, you have to be ready to go through some challenges. And you will probably go through financial challenges, which I certainly did.
Yeah.
But you'll also go through mental and spiritual challenges. And there will be challenges in your relationships, because oftentimes the people that are closest to us are vested in the lives that we've created, be it like your spouse, mm-hmm. or maybe your kids, or maybe your parents. Or maybe your best friend loves the fact that Eric has, you know, this really great podcast on, you know, on Bravo. And and if you want to change that all of a sudden, now you don't really, maybe you don't have access to BravoCon. They'll be like, well, wait a minute, why you want to change? Why you not want to do that anymore? They're afraid of what it's going to mean to their life.
Right.
And you will have people in your life that you think are supposed to be those who are your biggest supporters that will try and talk you out of changing your life. And to that I say, you must forge ahead, no matter what the naysayers say. You must.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that you saying that reminds me of, I'm a huge Christina Aguilera mm-hmm. fan, and Stripped is one of my favorite albums of all time. And The Voice Within is like mm-hmm. such an important message to trust in yourself and just know that no matter what other people might say, that you have the power and you have the ability to change yourself, and you just need to trust in that.
Yes, indeed. It's so true. And I love that album too. So I really, and it really is a part, when you're changing your life, you really do have to strip down. Mm-hmm. You have to get, like for me, I had to let go of so many personas that had built up over the years as a way to protect me, or what I thought was protecting me, as a way of, like, you know, making sure that people, that they couldn't pierce my armor. But what I found is that by building up those layers of personas, they became calcified, and it really did change who I was, and not for the better.
Yeah.
And when I started chipping away at that stuff is when we really got to the good stuff. And now at my core, I'm Little Brown Bevy again. I'm curious. I'm empathetic. I'm adventurous. You know, I am, I'm very, like, gracious, and I think about things in a very positive way. You know, I'm always looking at the bright side of things.
Right.
And I think that's probably why I wouldn't be good for like reality TV, because I'm always like, you know, I don't want to fight. You know, it's so funny, in my book, I talk about when I got cast for Fashion Queens. You know, there's a line in the book where I said, I'm sorry, Andy, but when I got Fashion Queens, I wasn't even sure I wanted to take it. And it was because my co-host, Derek J and Miss Lawrence, had been on Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Right.
And I was very concerned, not Derek J, because I knew him, he was my friend. I was very concerned that Miss Lawrence would come onto the show, on the set, and want to be combative. Because, as you know, a lot of what folks do on reality TV is fuss and fight and yeah, get into scraps, and it's drama. I can't have drama in my life. Not even for a check.
Right.
So I was very concerned. And then, of course, it turned out that he's one of my best friends now. So there was no drama. As a matter of fact, the reason why I'm called Mother is because of my little Derek J and Miss Lawrence. They start calling me Mother on the set of Fashion Queens.
Oh, that's so cute. I love that. Well, talking a little bit more about your book and getting back to your mom, I read that you were kind of hesitant to let your mom read, you know, certain parts of the book. So can you tell our listeners what you were trying to shield her from?
Well, the salacious sexual parts, right? I mean,
right.
You know, I'm a size queen. You know, there's two types of people in this life. Size queens and liars, you know. I prefer a well-endowed man. And so I didn't want her necessarily to read that. You know what I mean? And so, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to have to redact certain parts
right
of the book for her and everything, you know. So that's what I did. I'm like forcing them out in black. And I'm like, don't worry about those passages, mommy. And she's like, I hope you're not saying filthy words. I'm like, oh, I wish it was just filthy words, lady. I'm talking about filthy deeds.
Right. It's way more than just words.
Yes, way more than just words. Yeah. But, you know, that was an interesting thing, you know, to have to like shield her from. But, you know,
yeah,
I've been doing that before my friends' parents too. So many of my friends' parents bought the book as well. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, can you let them know? There's a lot of racy bits in there.
Right, right. Well, other than like parents, were you nervous about, you know, anyone else reading what might be in the book? Because I feel like there's so much, you know, personal information in there. And as much as it's going out to the world, it might be different just for people that know you or that you're close to.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't really that nervous. And that's the reason why I didn't name names when I told the stories, because I felt like, you know, it's fine if I want to expose myself, but I don't want to expose anyone else while telling my story. So I just felt like I wanted to protect
right
the not so innocent. But, you know, I just didn't want to, like, you know, again, I didn't want to exploit anyone, or I didn't want anyone to feel like, oh, so she's using my story and my right life to sell a book. I didn't want to do that. So I just said name folks. Yeah.
Well, you know, before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about everything that's going on in the world right now. And, you know, there's something to be said about the timing of this book's release. So were you worried about it coming out now, or do you feel like in some ways it's right on time?
Oh, it's definitely right on time.
Yeah.
Because the book is all about the pivot.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are having to pivot in their lives.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because coronavirus eliminated so much work, so many jobs for so many people. People have lost family members, friends, lovers, you know, partners, you know. And so everyone's in the process of a pivot of some sort. And this book is about that pivot. And it's also about, you know, my number one revelation is it gets greater later.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I look at someone like an Andy Cohen who, you know, initially wanted to be on TV and actually became a TV executive. And then that led him back to his, you know, kind of original dream.
Right.
Which was to be on TV. And so, you know, he didn't give up that idea. And instead, he incorporated a new dream into that dream. And
yeah,
and he loves being a producer. You know what I mean? He loves being a producer. And obviously, he's very good at finding talent. So, you know, I just feel like so many people can learn from that lesson. They can also learn from my lesson. Someone who's 38 and who was able to, you know, break into a field that's very youth-oriented, very thin-oriented, very white-oriented.
Yeah.
And I'm none of those things. And yet I was able to create enough of a demand for my talents that I was able to be on television and be a host and not have to do anything that would kind of not jive well with my spirit.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I know that you also have a connection to the Sundance Film Festival.
Yes.
So do you happen to know, we have our show Real Housewives of Salt Lake City now.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know Lisa Barlow?
I don't know Lisa Barlow. I don't even know which one that is, but I know you guys have that show. And I know people are absolutely obsessed with it. Yeah. And what I got to tell you, when Andy told me that you guys were doing it, I was like, really? Because they're Mormons, so many Mormons.
I know.
But I will say this. Every time I fly into Salt Lake City, and there's quite a drive. It's probably an hour from the Salt Lake City airport to Park City, which is where Sundance is held. You know, there's always a hot, young driver, and traditionally Mormon or maybe an ex-Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, those Mormons know how to have fun. Dot, dot, dot. So I'm not surprised this show is a big hit.
Yeah, well, and not everyone is a Mormon on the show, but it is really interesting to see how each of them interpret their religion and how they practice it. Lisa Barlow is one. Heather Gay, who's another big fan favorite so far on the show, is also Mormon and kind of struggling with, she's gotten a divorce and she's really trying to reconcile how that is. But
who's the one who married her grandfather?
Well, that is Mary M. Cosby, and it's her step grandfather.
but it's still her grandfather, right?
Yes. Yeah. He was married to her grandmother before she
died. So that's your grandfather. Okay.
Yeah, she has.
So that's interesting.
It's very interesting. She has been quite a controversial character on the show. But yeah, Lisa Barlow has, you know, self-proclaimed queen of Sundance. So I'm always just so curious.
Yeah, I'm there working with like Ava DuVernay, hosting dinners for like people like Ava DuVernay and people like, you know, gosh, I've done so many dinners. People for like Pharrell and dinner parties for like, you know, Quincy Jones and his daughter. And, you know, yeah. And then I do cocktails every single year with HBO. So, I mean, we might be in a different kind of social. I'm just saying I'm working in a space of the film and TV space.
Right.
I'm there really like actually connecting the dots with projects and things.
Yeah. She owns a tequila company. So I think her priorities are a little bit different, you know.
Well, you know, my favorite drink is a Bevorita, so maybe I need to connect with her.
That's true. That is true. We'll see what we can hook up there. Maybe next Sundance, you guys can collaborate.
Does that mean I have to watch the show?
Yeah, it's a first season, so you don't have too much to catch up on. You know, it only premiered a few months ago. So, or you could just wait till the reunion. The reunion is when it all comes out, you know?
Okay, yeah, maybe I'll just do that.
There's a lot to unpack with these ladies. We mentioned earlier being born, raised, and still living in Harlem. What do you love most about your neighborhood?
Oh, I just love that it's actually a real community, you know? We know each other. We support each other. So when the coronavirus first happened, there was a huge, you know, WhatsApp chain of about 200 people that are, you know, in the community. And we were talking to each other about, do you have Clorox wipes? Do you have masks? Do you have gloves? What do you need? Do you need water? And when my father passed away, they actually were able to come to my aid and give me a bunch of N95 masks, which, as you know, were like gold during the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
They were able to give me enough for my whole family so that we could actually attend my dad's funeral safely. So that's what I love about Harlem. It's a real community. And it always has been. Also, we have beautiful architecture. And also there's always something going on in the community. There's a life and a vibrancy. And no matter what goes on, we make lemonade out of lemons all day, every day. And I think that's a part of why I have this resilient spirit and also this kind of upbeat, positive, kind of personality. It has a lot to do with being born and raised in Harlem.
Yeah. Well, you have to settle something for me because when I first moved to New York, lived up in what I call Washington Heights. I was at 159th and Broadway.
Yeah.
But I think people were trying to start a Hamilton Heights name for that neighborhood.
Nonsense.
So like where does Harlem begin and end for you?
110th, River the River to 155th, River the River.
Okay. And then above 155th would be, you would Washington say Washington Heights.
Yes.
Okay.
That's where our friend Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote the Heights.
Right, exactly.
To see this summer.
Yeah, no.
Don't know where you were.
Right. So, yeah, I, when I first moved up there, you know, I would say that and I would talk about, oh, yeah, I live in Manhattan. I live in Washington Heights. And people would be like, well, where? I'd say the address and they'd be like, well, that's Hamilton Heights. And I'm like, I don't know. Okay. I feel like it's Washington Heights.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Oh, honey, you know, they will change a neighborhood on you in a minute, the gentrifiers.
I know. It's so true. It's true. Yeah. Well, Bevy, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is fantastic. Can you tell our listeners where they can follow you and, of course, where they can get your book?
It's all Bevy Smith, all day, every day. And they should also know that Andy Cohen, who they all know and love, this is his third book on his Andy Cohen Books imprint. So definitely, if you want to support Andy, you should support this book. And the book is sold where books are everywhere. Everywhere the books are sold, that's where you can find the book.
That's right.
So it's kind of dreamy.
And I also just put it together that you are also in the same, you know, catalog as Mariah Carey.
I sure am. Ain't that cute? Ain't that cute?
I'm actually reading her book right now. I'm reading her book right now.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Me, Dr. Jackie, and Mariah. What an unholy trinity.
Oh, I love Dr. Jackie, too. Oh. Well, Bevy, thank you so much again for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you, my love. It was a blast.
All right. Talk to you soon. Southern Charm?
Yes.
Please don't judge me, but Whitney has looked pretty damn good this season.
Okay. I agree with you.
Okay, good.
He looks like Rhett Butler a little bit.
There is something about his look at this party that just is like, I've never given him a second look, but I did this time.
But I have to say, I am in that minority where I'm like, I love a mustache on a man.
Oh, right, right. I mean, Madison seems to, too. She offers, you know, can I take a mustache ride?
Five, how bro. Much for that stash ride?
Hey, baby.
Ugh.
I was like, damn. I was like, that is forward. And are you only saying that to hurt Austin or are you being sincere? I don't know. Okay, I need your perspective on this too. If you are still having sex with people at other people's houses, is it time to grow up?
Oh, right. Because Madison's friend said he was over at my, what was it? It was something like, is that what you're talking about?
Somebody's friend's house. Yeah. And that's where Austin had sex with this girl or whatever. But I'm like, does that still happen? Number one, it's a pandemic. Number two, I just feel like what you breaking off and going into somebody's bedroom? Like what's happening? I don't get it. It feels very college to me.
You're right. But yeah. The COVID of it all, you know,
the COVID of it all. Come on, Austin.
I just feel this, first of all, seems like the worst party of all time because you have Madison and Austin playing this whole game the whole time, which I will say it's more Madison than Austin, but it's like they're fighting. You have all these girls, you know, trying to confront Catherine. It's just like a lot of chasing of people, and it doesn't seem like a great time.
No, not at all. And actually, John Pringle, he spoke to Us Weekly and talked about how tough it was to watch Madison berate Austin. And reading some of the things that he was saying, I kind of agree. I do feel like she took it a bit too far in this episode.
Yeah, well, screaming, you're a beta in his face.
You're a beta! You're a pussy!
It's so emasculating. And the thing is, you're not together. You've said you can't be together, so stop it.
Exactly.
To me, it also speaks to Austin in his own boundaries that he's not setting for himself.
Yeah.
Because I think at a certain point, he should be like, you're not my girlfriend. First of all, you shouldn't talk to me like that, period. Second of all, you certainly don't get to talk to me like that when you're not my girlfriend.
Right.
And just de-escalate, you know, walk away.
Yeah, I know. She was escalating a few times in this episode, unnecessarily, I think. Were you really invested in the shark attack / dolphin sex? Because I was.
Were you?
I was like, what's going on? Is it an attack or is it an orgy? I don't know.
It's one of those things where it's like in person, if I see a dolphin, I lose my mind. I think that's very exciting. But watching people on screen react to a dolphin slash shark does not really do it for me.
I know. I just like the National Geographic of it all. I was just sort of like, what's going to happen? I got to know. And we didn't really get any resolution there, which I'm not even sure we got any resolution by the end of this episode either. I guess we did a little bit.
Of anything. Oh, okay. Well, the Catherine stuff was, it's just been frustrating for a while now on, you know, the past few episodes. And I felt like Madison was definitely getting overly involved, you know, because I think she just wanted, you know, Catherine to, like, everyone's waiting for this moment. So Catherine, come on, go give him this moment. You gotta, like, amping her up in a way that's just, like, not even appropriate.
Right, because we're not looking for Catherine to go in there and defend herself. We're looking for Catherine to go in there and receive what everyone is trying to tell her, process it, and move forward from it. So Madison is gassing her up unnecessarily because that's not what needs to happen right now.
Oh, and then her and Danny getting into it.
Oh my God, Danny is just so delicate. I feel like I'm so worried about her just like cracking.
That's what Craig says.
She's like at her breaking point right now with Catherine, and it feels like with everybody, and I'm worried.
But like when she said to Madison, I'm about to slap you off of this dock, I was like, yes. Danny, you will break a rib if you sneeze the wrong way. Do not come at Madison, who actually works out and could kick your ass in a heartbeat.
So I'm about to smack you off this dock. Oh, don't tell me it has nothing to do with wood. You. You're such a bully. You're a rat. All you do is suck her ass 24/7. Why don't you hair balls? And all you do is stand up for her, and she doesn't for you.
Right, and you're on the edge of the dock, so she can push you right off. So I wouldn't start making threats based on your position here. You know, at the end of the day, I think that if Catherine had done what Brandy on Dallas did this season by addressing what happened in front of the group, apologizing, talking about the experience, recognizing what she did wrong, and just putting it out there so that everyone can hear it, understand that she's sorry, and then everybody can move forward. But Catherine has been dodging the accountability. And I think she's just like, I don't know what everyone expects from me. I don't know what everyone expects. And it's like, we expect you to apologize, to recognize that you did wrong, to own what happened and learn from it and move on. And I think they got through to her by the end of the conversation, but TBD.
Yeah, judging by the first look at the reunion, I would say I'm not so sure.
Yeah. It's like part of me understands her argument of, I made one mistake, it doesn't define me. It's true. But how you handle the fallout and the aftermath from that mistake says more about your character than that mistake. And I don't think she is doing all of the processing afterwards properly. And that's what everyone is upset about.
Well, I totally agree with your Brandy example, because what Brandy did was horrendous, but it's the way that she apologized that made it feel sincere and like she got it.
Yeah, absolutely. She seems to be willing to do the work to improve, and we haven't seen that in Catherine yet.
Salt Lake City?
Salt Lake City. Okay, so we know that this whole season has been a huge storyline between Whitney and her dad and him in recovery for his addiction. The last that we heard about 2 weeks ago, Whitney hasn't spoken to her father, which makes me really sad to watch this scene with her and her siblings and her dad and this very constructive conversation they seem to be having. And then knowing this information, it's heartbreaking.
Well, wait, hasn't spoken to him like there was a fallout, or hasn't heard from him like something's wrong?
Well, she hadn't heard from him at all. I think she had reached out and he hadn't contacted her back. And this was 2 weeks ago, and she was doing an Instagram live like Q&A, and someone had asked her, have you spoken to your father? How is he doing? And she said, I'm a bit concerned. I've been reaching out, but I haven't heard from him. So that was about 2 weeks ago. I don't know currently what the state is, and I hope that everything is okay. But just knowing how much work she's put in,
yeah,
and how invested she has been in his recovery, it's just so sad to think that, you know, just within 12 months of this all going down, that now they're not in the same place. But, you know, this is addiction, and it's just so sad.
I just rewatched Beautiful Boy yesterday.
Oh God.
Which, have you seen it?
No, but I know about it.
It's very good. It's actually, like, I think such an amazing depiction of addiction,
yeah.
But it just reminds me of this because, you know, you go from things being so great and someone having all the support and love in the world, and then, you know,
yeah,
relapses still happen. Not that that's what has happened. We don't know. But it just, I think that can be such a scary thing.
Yeah.
Like having an addict in your life. You never know.
Absolutely. So we're off to Vegas.
Without Mary.
Without Mary. Come on. I mean, come on, Mary. Doesn't she know, as a housewife, the cast trip is a pretty significant part of the whole season?
I just could not put myself in a trip anywhere with Jen. Put it this way, I'd rather have a plane full of mice than to be in Vegas with Jen.
I will agree. I think that she has made a terrible misjudgment on not going. You know, Housewife 101 is you want to be on the trip. Remember in like season 5 of Real Housewives of New York City, Heather Thompson disinvited Ramona from London, and Ramona was pissed because she knew you have to go on the trips.
Yeah, Mary was like, if Jen's going, I'm not going. Forget it. But also, is Vegas the place to go to bond? I'm not so sure that's a bonding destination.
Right. People aren't doing trust falls in Vegas.
Yeah, and especially the trip starts off with Lisa going before everybody and not communicating that to Whitney, which honestly, I think I'm a Lisa apologist, and I just thought that was such a boss move, and I love that she went early because it was pretty shady and I think intentional, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, she was being a real dick on this episode. Didn't RSVP, didn't answer Whitney's phone calls, only, but then would go and call Meredith right away.
Like, right. Do you think that Lisa is someone who is all talk? Because she does present herself in a very specific way, right?
Yeah.
As this like businesswoman, like she says yes to every opportunity. She's always busy. She's always on her phone. And then she's talking about these race cars, how she loves race cars. And she can't wait. And she's so excited. And then she's going like 70 miles per hour around the track, which is still pretty fast. But like when you could be going 110, come on. You know, like that's just like
70 is highway driving.
I know, but it's still just like, what is she all talk in other parts of her life that we just don't know yet, just based on this interaction?
After all the talk about how great of a driver Lisa is, she gets out on that track and drives slower than my grandmother.
I mean, not like, I actually think she handled it the correct way, but she was a lot of, you know, a lot of hot air about how Whitney had wronged her and how pissed she was. But she came around real quick when Whitney apologized after the racing. And yeah. She's like, okay, we're good. Right. Which I actually think is great. But it is funny. Like certain people are like, oh my God. Like if this bitch tries to talk to me, I'm going to have words for her. But it was really pretty fine.
But you know what's confusing to me about Whitney's apology is, I'm glad she apologized. I appreciate that she owned it and they were able to move forward. But why didn't Meredith flag, like, well, hold on, Whitney, though. What were you saying about Jen and my marriage that night? Like, why isn't Meredith bringing that up?
It's so clear to me she's not bringing it up because she doesn't want it out there.
Right.
Like, so maybe, because I think in a way, maybe she's hoping, okay, they won't air that.
Yeah.
But they will if you keep talking about it.
Yeah. Well, and then on the other side of it, though, Jen is ranting to Heather about how you have to follow through with something when you bring it up. Like, what is Whitney doing? But at this point now, she's fully ditched the whole Meredith rumor that she brought to Whitney to begin with. And so she's not following through with the rest of this stuff. And is it because she does want to align herself with Meredith and Lisa because she views them a certain way compared to Heather and Whitney? Like, is she trying to protect Meredith at this point? I'm just confused. It seems a little hypocritical. It's just, I don't know. There are a lot of inconsistencies with Jen, especially because she seems to get upset with people after they apologize to her. She kind of waits until, you know, Mary was like, I'm sorry, very first, second episode of the season. Mary's like, I don't want to fight with you. Like, I'm sorry, let's move past this. And then before you know it, Jen's still mad at Mary. And same thing with Whitney now.
I just don't get it. I don't understand why she's so upset. No one ruined Sharif's party but her and the way she handled it. And by the way, it's very clear that people are scared of her because in Scenes for Next Time, that woman says, who here doesn't trust Jen Shaw? And everyone raises their hands.
I know. Well, the trust thing is interesting because someone can overreact. Someone can have a temper. And that says one thing about who they are. But to not trust somebody means that you don't really think that they have your best interests in mind. Even if they do have a short temper and all of that stuff, like, there, it says a lot more about Jen's character, I think, that everyone is like, I don't trust her. I mean, does Heather raise her hand? I forgot to clock if she also raised her hand in that moment.
Oh, I need to rewatch it, but I need to rewatch. Because I was just like, oh my God, Jen is going to flip her shit.
I know. But she hasn't done a lot so far this season to prove that she is trustworthy, unless she is sitting on some information about Meredith that she has decided not to bring out. I guess that would be the one quality that makes sense.
But she did in a way. So, I mean...
Yeah, she still brought it up on camera. And
yeah.
I mean, who's to say? But I don't know. Did you see all of the reunion looks for Salt Lake City?
I felt like they looked good. Am I wrong or am I right?
No, you're right. You're right. I think everyone looked great and everyone brought their own personal sense of style to it. Like, Jen's is pretty extra. Meredith is very, it has like a collar and some like buttons, very similar to like her Fendi jacket and those more kind of power suit looks that she puts together. I think everyone did a great job. For a first reunion, you know, I think everyone did a pretty...
I'm just really curious to see how they do on their first reunion. You know, like, will someone like Lisa make up for the fact that she hasn't really been filming a lot with the other women? Will Mary make up for the fact that she didn't go on this trip, you know?
Yeah. From what I know about the seating arrangements, it's pretty interesting to know who's on which side because it's not what you would expect.
Ooh.
Okay, Rose and Thorn?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, what was your rose?
My rose was from Real Housewives of Orange County, and it was this moment. So, like, Andy and Kelly, you know, it got very heated at various parts of the reunion because he's asking tough questions, and she doesn't like that. And, you know, I don't know if they'll show this, but at one point he is like, look, Kelly, you and I have never talked about this. That's why we have to go over this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's just clearly so exasperated having to answer for, which, I mean, look, I'm not even going to go into that because she needs to.
Right.
But I appreciated that then there was this sweet moment where he asked Elizabeth, you know, are you still in love with your ex? And Kelly goes, great question. He goes, thank you, Kelly.
I know.
I just really liked that.
Do you think you still love him?
Good question.
Thank you, Kelly.
It was one of those like side moments that you probably never expect to make air, but I appreciate that they added that nod to show that, you know, Kelly and Andy,
there is this,
they still have a relationship outside of what has happened and the differences that they may have and all of that. It makes it a little bit more real.
Right. What was your rose?
Well, so my rose is going to be a little bit different this week. So my rose is my grandmother, Shirley Louise Pariseau. She passed away on Sunday, January 17th. And she was just like, you know, she was just like the perfect grandma. She was my first best friend. She flirted with everybody, which you would totally have appreciated, Megan. She's like, you'll be just like her when you get older. And, you know, I got my sense of humor from her. We have similar eyes. You know, it's just one of those things where, you know, looking back, you are obviously sad and you mourn the loss. But I think right now I'm in the sort of reflective, like, celebrate the life stage of, you know, grieving. And she was just a great lady. So Shirley is my rose today and every day.
God, you're going to make me cry. That's so sweet. And I just, so much love to you and your mom, Kim, who you know I adore.
Yes. Thank you.
Thinking of you guys.
Thank you. What was your thorn?
So I have a couple from Below Deck. This week's episode was great. Rachel, who is just a hot mess when she drinks, who was just bashing James right in front of James. And Elizabeth not really standing up for him, even though she's already in love with him. But she's also a little bit my thorn because she's clearly one of these hippy-dippy people who thinks everything means something. And the fact that she met a guy she likes must mean that they should get married. And the fact that she keeps saying that and she's not joking, I was like, oh my God, Elizabeth, you look crazy. You gotta stop.
Right. I think she's a little bit of a different kind of girl covering up with this hippie attitude. You know, I think if she were really as in touch with energy and things, maybe she wouldn't be taking this so seriously. I don't know. It's very strange. My thorn is from Real Housewives of Dallas, and it's Stephanie's locker room foundation. Because really, like, I just think that I just feel like schools are already so underfunded when it comes to actual education and the arts. And I think, I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like for the most part, you know, athletics and sports divisions are pretty well funded across the board, more so than other parts of school. So I could be wrong in that, but I was just kind of like, this doesn't seem like the kind of heartwarming charity that I would feel compelled. You know, this isn't Candy Cares. This is like locker rooms. Okay, I guess.
Wow. I mean, yeah.
I mean, you're from Texas. You know how big sports are. Like, I understand that in certain places, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of locker rooms that need new lockers and all of that kind of stuff. But it
just— Look, I'm just saying you're being real Kenya about this whole thing, like questioning people's charitable motivations.
And you know I love Stephanie. Like, I absolutely adore her. But it's just like, I'm like, this just did not speak to me in the way that foundations should.
You will not be sending your money.
I will not be donating. Like Marlo handing over her $5,000 check in front of everyone. Like, I will not be doing that for this locker foundation. And we'll be back with an all new episode next week.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me.